Today's presentation, Why Whales, is going to be given by Ian Kerr of the Ocean Alliance. It'll last about 45 minutes with an opportunity to ask questions at the end, and we are so grateful for you to be here today. Thank you.
No, my pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you. Yeah, hopefully you do that at the end. So I think what is interesting during the last talk, I'm hoping this is going to fit sort of better than I thought, because I'm almost going to take you around the world into the world of whales and sort of into the world of technology and how on one level technology is almost democratizing science by providing them with affordable tools. And I'll say this just as a start, my area of research, marine mammal research, has almost been a prerogative of the privileged, you know. Woods Hole has a $50 million research vessel that costs $30,000 a day. Scripps has a $57 million research vessel. You know, the reality is it's expensive. I mean, Ocean Alliance, we had for 20 years a sailboat called the Odyssey, cost almost $3,000 a day. And that's before you do anything, before you put the scientific equipment on board and the people and the personnel and the feeding and the permits. So the reality is, oceanography tends to be expensive. All right. So, first of all, the wonderful thing about a captive audience is I get to complain and you have to sit there and listen, okay? I think we're terrible at naming things, all right? This is Planet Ocean. It is not Planet Earth. So please, when you leave here today, we live on Planet Ocean. 71% of the planet is Planet Ocean, is water. We know that. And I'm not sure if you're aware, but all countries own within 200 miles of the shore. So do you know that's called the exclusive economic zone? So what's interesting, if you take the 200-mile piece off the 71, you're left with 64%, okay, considered high seas or international waters, right? So 64% is high seas or international water. And I'm sorry we're starting with a math lesson, it'll get better. But if you then apply that 64% back, it basically means almost half of the Earth's surface belongs to nobody. It's international waters, okay? And it's very interesting because in England, and I'm sorry, I am British, but in England they had a guy called Garrett Hardin that talked about the tragedy of the commons. I'm not sure if you're aware about this. He had common land and everyone used it. And guess what? Everyone abused it. So I'm of the opinion our oceans are the 21st century tragedy of the commons. And part of the problem that a lot of people don't realize is the oceans are downhill from everything and gravity never sleeps. So stuff inexorably works its way down into our oceans. It may take days, weeks, months, years, decades, but ultimately it works its way down into the oceans. Now, you only just got to know me. Guess what? I'm actually a very positive person. I think humanity's future is in our oceans, and probably more than you realize right now. Do you know that 2 out of every 3 breaths we take comes from ocean photosynthesis rather than terrestrial photosynthesis? The oceans are the largest mediating force on this planet. And I think, I mean, you know, I'm not going to go, in case you're thinking I'm one of those people that read the lists, you're okay. If you can't read, that's your own problem. But generally, I think everything that we do on the land, we're going to be doing in the ocean, only because we're sort of filling the land masses up. Okay? And I think there's a great opportunity now for a sort of a new blue economy. Anyway, from my perspective, I'm a whale guy, I'm a marine mammal guy, and I'm concerned because the more we do in the ocean, the more likely we will affect the species that are in there, okay? So the type of science I do is really conservation-based science, so I'm not doing science just for the sake of collecting data. I'm not saying that's bad, it's just not what we do. We try to collect data, and then we publish on that, we speak at international meetings and all sorts, and hopefully we affect policy change. In fact, I've been part of creating 2 huge marine sanctuaries, one in Papua New Guinea and one in the Indian Ocean, where thousands of square miles have actually been declared a marine mammal sanctuary because of the data that we've collected. And there's lots of stuff going on here that you might not think about. I have to say, it's almost a little sad. I've been doing this for 30 years. Imagine if you were building a house and 30 years later there was less of a house than when you started. You'd be pretty depressed. When I started, it was just commercial whaling, Okay? And actually, even though commercial whaling is now pretty much done, we've now got, I said I wouldn't go through the list, but chemical pollution, bycatch, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm just going to pick on some of them here. Any of you ever heard of acoustic bleaching? Like, nod your heads. Anyone ever heard of acoustic bleaching? So what's interesting, acoustic bleaching, an example would be if there was a dog in here sort of yapping away, you'd be like, I can't hear myself think. And actually, in this next slide, these little dots here, so this is Boston, this is Gloucester where I am, this is the Stellwagen Bank Marine Mammal Sanctuary, this is Provincetown, and this is the ship channels where the ships have to go down. And these are all right whales, okay? And basically, this means, I've got to make sure I explain this well, the size of this dot is how far that animal's sort of acoustic environment is. And one thing I want you to understand today, we live in a world of sight. We live in a world of vision. I guess I didn't put my phone on mute. Wait a minute, let's just do that. So got to have Snotbot on the phone, of course. But anyway, so we live in a world of sight, okay? Whales live in a world of sound. You know, water visibility, 100 feet, you can't hear each other. And actually, we've done experiments showing whales can hear each other over thousands of miles apart. So for a whale, a whale could not hear itself in this circle. Do you know what I mean? So if any whale is within this circle, that means it couldn't hear another whale. So if you're a group of social whales, you know, you don't want to see areas like this. So I'm just going to show you a sort of a classic example of acoustic bleaching. And these big dots, this is actually a LNG plant off Gloucester. And the other big dots are ships just moving through the area. And this was really quite a short period, but we actually worked out that these animals probably can't hear each other 50% of the time. Imagine if I said to you, okay, you can all go to school, but you can't have your eyes open 50% of the time. I think your capacity would be limited. And then have any of you heard of seismic testing, seismic profiling with the oil companies where they put these sounds? So actually, I'm just going to play a recording. I was down in the Gulf of Mexico after the Deepwater Horizon oil spill. And here's a recording of the an air gun. So they're shooting these air guns off to try to hear what they're doing, seismic profiling underneath to sort of find oil. I'll turn this up a little bit. So that's a whale, sperm whale. So that was the that's a whale. Yep, that's a sperm whale. And that's the air gun. Can you imagine that air gun's going off, I can't work it out, every 6 seconds all day. And the bang is when it's hitting the bottom and reflecting all through the ocean. So what's interesting, I just bring this up as part of the discussion, but to try to find more oil, we're actually filling the world's oceans full of sand. All right. Now, a lot of people don't realize, you know, people tend to think whales are fine, whales are okay. There are actually over 10 species of whales right now that are critically endangered. So again, my job, what I'm trying to do is encourage sustainable ocean practices. So for example, even in the Gulf of Mexico, we found a primary feeding area was called the DeSoto Canyon. So we basically said, during these 3 or 4 months of the year, you know what I mean, don't do seismic exploration or oil drilling in the DeSoto Canyon, okay? So I'm trying to find sort of the way to have sustainable ocean industries. And another thing that annoys me a little bit, I'll talk to you about, whales and dolphins. I don't want any of you ever to talk about whales and dolphins again, because I don't know if you know this, dolphins are just small toothed whales. There's a group in England called the Whale and Dolphin Conservation Society. I'm like, no, that's the Whale and Whale Conservation Society. How weird is that? So whales are basically broken up into two groups, the Odontoceti, the toothed whales, which include sperm whales, orcas, dolphins, and then the Mysticeti, the baleen whales. So bowhead, gray humpback, right whale, blue whale, Brutus whale, and then here are some of the smaller toothed whales. And alas, the animals that are most at risk right now are the smaller toothed whales, okay, that live sort of near shore, near humans, or even the worst ones are the ones that live in the rivers. And the Yangtze River dolphin was lost in 2013. I mean, you know, I still struggle with sort of infinity and beyond, but extinction, that's it, gone, you know, never coming back. And I think in our age that we live in, you know, these big species, we should have the capacity to keep these species alive. So one of the things we did from 2000 to 2005 is actually we sent our research vessel Odyssey around the world, okay? And basically we wanted to try to find baseline data on ocean pollution. So our thought was we'll go to some of the remotest places of the world, collect baseline data, do you know what I mean? And then we'll have something so we can put it into context. Because science is about context, do you know what I mean? If, you know, I can't think of an example, but if you met some species that had really large feet and you saw one of them such as large feet, I mean, do all of them have large feet or just that one? You know, you have to be able to put it into context. So anyway, we sent the Odyssey around the world, and actually we 11 ecoregions. What's actually interesting is we worked with a whale called the sperm whale. What's interesting with the sperm whales, it's a bimorphic species. The males are bigger than the females. And the females and calves feed at the equatorial zone, and the males feed at the pole, which means I could go around the world along the equator pretty much and actually sample males and females of one species, almost get a global data set of pollution. And what is interesting is we actually tracked whales back to technology again using a military technology, which is called an acoustic array. We weren't just looking for whales. And generally, here's the acoustic array. It was a hydrophone, okay, about 1,000 feet long. We dragged behind the boat. And in its sort of simplest manner, if I had a microphone here and a microphone here and you spoke, my microphone would recognize it's here before here, and the computer can then get a range and bearing to you. So don't worry about this next. Here's some sperm whales again. Just a single animal. We don't really know what they're doing with these sounds. Anyway, I won't let the sperm whales steal the show. So here's a program we use called Rainbow Click, but in one level it's quite simple. Here was the left hydrophone, here's the right hydrophone, here's the interpulse interval between the two sounds arriving. So we could actually get range and bearing. And what was very cool, when I started 30 years ago, we really were just looking. And guess what? We couldn't track whales at night or in bad weather. Now with this acoustic array, we can track whales 24 hours a day, good weather or bad. Not all species of whales, and the whales like blue whales that do 5 hertz, which is incredibly low, the frequency is so low, you can't track them. You can hear them, but you can't track them. Anyway, so we actually did a report. I'm actually going to email you a copy of this report of this trip around the world. One sort of disappointing thing, I mean, look at some of these locations, Papua New Guinea, Galapagos, Sea of Cortez. We went to some of the remotest parts on the planet. And let me just do the next slide. This is just showing you the US EPA and the FDA say anything more than 0.3 parts per million in any sort of food is not allowed, okay? And actually, some of the levels here, 1 part per million, 2 parts per million, you're actually getting demonstrated effects of mercury pollution. So here we are in some of the remotest parts of the world. For, you know, 2 parts per million, that's a lot of mercury. So the sad thing is, you know, I say to this next generation, my generation used to think we could sort of lifestyle ourselves away from pollution. Do you know what I mean? I won't live here, I won't do that. You know, certainly buying organic food is good, but the reality now is ocean winds and ocean currents are basically transporting this garbage all over the world. You can look up this place, Kiribati, in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and we found high levels of hexachlorobenzene in Kiribati. And hexachlorobenzene is actually an industrial fungicide that is only used for sort of large-scale industrial farming. So anyway, just quickly, this is our facility down in Gloucester, Massachusetts. Our group was actually founded in 1971 by a guy called Roger Payne. And we do a lot of stuff. And we need about $4.5 million to finish this facility. And I worked it out. If each one of you gives $226,000.50, my job is done. Was that? Did I mention that? No. But it's fun. It's actually sort of fun because this was a place where they made anti-fouling paint, and I actually think anti-fouling paint actually, if you want, lubricated America's first ever industrial revolution, which was commercial fisheries. The bad thing is, anti-fouling paint is toxic. And actually, my wife, when I all excited, I walked her through these buildings and showed her the building. She said, I haven't seen a single insect or a single bug in 20,000 square feet. And I realized, maybe these buildings are a little polluted. Anyway, moving on, the idea is we're trying to drive innovation, accelerate research, disseminate data, and build solutions. And again, that's not really the function of today's talk, but I think it's important to lay the foundation. Any of you heard of the Voyager 1 or 2 spacecraft? Any sort of science tech people? Well, it's sort of fun because our whale recordings are on those spacecraft. And those spacecraft are now in the heliosphere. And the heliosphere is where the solar winds from other suns are greater than the solar winds from our suns. And what happened is Roger Payne was a friend of Carl Sagan. And it's hilarious for me because if any of you ever watched sort of the Cosmos series, one of those very recognizable voices, and he would call up, and I in those days I'd pick up the phone and he'd call up and be, hello, is Roger there? It's Carl Sagan. And I say, Carl, I knew who it was at hello, you know, because it was that type of voice. But anyway, so here's the gold record. What's sort of interesting is this gold record is all about humanity's achievements. Humanity did this, and humanity did that, and we've done that, and we've invented all this stuff. And then right at the end, by the way, the largest animals that ever existed on this planet that sing songs. And I'm going to play you some of these songs now. But before I do, I want you to understand one thing. Right now, obviously, you're hearing my voice project. And typically, you know, our ears are out so we can sort of hear things. If you're ever in a boat, like a sailboat, and the engine isn't running, and you're in a cabin, your cabin acts like a sort of sound box. And the sounds, and this has happened to me, and I'll be blunt, the first time I heard whale songs at sea, when I was looking for whales at night, so I was on an expedition in a sailboat to find whales at night, I heard the whale songs, I had to turn the light on in my cabin, because, you know, because what actually happens is, the sounds sound like they're coming from inside your head because you're in the sound box. Does that make sense? So imagine these old sailors of the 1800s, do you know what I mean, in these wooden sailboats listening to these sounds. This is one animal just recircling the air. We don't know why they sing the songs. We've got plenty of ideas. I hate to let any of you down, but we think it actually could be the animal that sings the loudest, the most complex song for the longest time could be the fittest animal to mate with. So the theory is now it's male whales that sing the songs, and that's a theory. Certainly it seems to work with our species. My understanding is rock musicians have a much higher reproductive. All right, moving on. I want to throw something else at you tonight, which I think speaks well to what you're doing. So I'm based out of Gloucester, and Gloucester is one of these old fishing villages, and the whole fishing industry has collapsed. And I'm doing a broad paintbrush here. So anybody writing stuff down, remember this is a broad paintbrush, because if we work out all the numbers, it will take too long. But roughly 2 million whales were killed during the whaling era. About 2 million whales, okay? Now, there are big whales and small whales, you know, I mean, you know, and a whale can eat 5% of its body weight a day and often defecate, you know, 2% or more. So 150-ton animal. Anyway, if we average it out, you know, you could almost say a whale is defecating about 2 tons of poop a day, okay? So if we've lost 2 million whales, okay, well, you guys work it out. That's half a million tons of fertilizer in the ocean every day. And I'm sure you've talked about this, but, you know, biology is real simple. You know, this one eats that one, and if there's a lot of that, then you get more of these. And if you get more of these, you get more of these. That's sort of how the food chain works, and it's almost feast and famine with cycles depending on climate and whatever. So I actually think the reality is it's that one of the reasons why fisheries are down is because we killed so many whales. And who'd have thought that, you know? Anyway, I hope this isn't going to happen to any of you. It might, but have any of you sort of thought about this catch-22 here? You want a job, but you need experience. Job required. Anyway, the experience. There's a similar catch-22 with reference to studying endangered species. If you have an endangered species, often on the left hand, you have people that are like, it's endangered, don't look at it, don't touch it, don't smile at it, don't get near it, leave it alone. You know what I mean? Let it recover. And then the group on the other side are like, oh my God, we need to know why it's dying. Let's biopsy it, tag it, take blood samples and whatever. And I say that BS, because that is before Snotbot, but we'll talk about that. But that is the issue that, you know, how do we collect data from whales non-invasively? And it's funny, for whatever it's worth, this is me in Patagonia in 1990. Oh, but I'm right there, okay, and this was a parasail and a helium balloon. And even then, we were trying to get above the whales to sort of look down, see how they're all interacting and count them. So this whole idea of even drones goes back to the 1990. It's pretty funny. When I grew up, there used to be a show, I think it was called What's My Job? And you had to guess what this person did for a job. I really wish they'd seen this photograph, because it turned out in Argentina in 1990, they didn't have helium for the helium balloon. They only had hydrogen. And I don't know if you know, but hydrogen is incredibly inflammable. So I wanted to be, yes, Mom, I'm a whale biologist. Anyway. So again, how do we collect samples from whales? Clearly, there's the obvious joke, very carefully. But I didn't bring it down. I did bring the arrow. I wasn't comfortable walking in here with a crossbow. I thought I might not make the lecture. But we have a special little tip on the end of here. And basically, with the crossbow, you shoot the arrow into the side of a whale. You can see the arrow bouncing out right there. And you get a little eraser-sized piece of tissue that we can then analyze. But the problem is, and you can see in all of these shots, you have to get close to the whale. And it's not easy to get close to the whale. I mean, I can't think of a good analogy, but imagine your doctor was across the road, you know, with a big horse syringe and a big needle, like, hello, well, I just need a sample. You'd be like, well, I'm out of here. The reality is, though, I think probably less so than the presence of the vessel is all the noise in the water. You know, the whale's lying around there, whatever, and there's rah, 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 all this noise coming closer and closer. And I think, you know, again, I don't think whales are necessarily stressed by the presence of a boat. I tend to think it's the acoustics of the boat. By the way, notice that word I use, stress, there. We'll get back to that more in a little bit minute. And here's sort of almost a whale's eye perspective. And this is another little invention of mine. We called it the whale boom, and it stuck out 30 feet. And here I am on the boom getting ready to biopsy. It meant we could get closer to the whale without having to bring the boat closer and closer.
You invented that?
The whale boom, yeah. I mean, it's a, you know, I just wanted to get close to the whale, but without being close, if that makes sense. Anyway, so In my industry, and I guess in many other industries, we have a thing basically called the observer effect. And the observer effect is the act of collecting data is changing the data. And no disrespect, I ask any of you, if you want to volunteer, if I shoot this into you, I'm sure your whole demeanor will change and your interest in science might change. So with whales, I mean, this is how it's being done. You know, we go up to the whales and we either collect slough skin or whatever. But so I was trying to say, how can we collect this data? And what was interesting is I was sitting on that whale boom. If we go back, well, I went the wrong way there. I was sitting on this whale boom right here one day. And again, and you may have seen this in this video, I just said this, but you know, we raced over to this whale and it dove, and there's one, and so we raced over to that whale and it dove, and it raced over that whale and it dove. And I'm the guy that's often raising the money. So I'm having to raise $3,000 a day, and the blooming whales are diving and they're diving, and I gotta go home and say, oh yes, for the $3,000, we didn't get anything, you know? And it was as simple. I was sitting there one day, the whale dove, and this cloud of like snot came all over me, and it was really icky and sticky and very smelly. And I thought, hey, you know what? Smelly. It's a biologist's dream. And I thought, I wonder if, you know, snot has valuable stuff in it. And if you think about it, even a breathalyzer test, something I hope that happens to none of us, breathalyzer tests are measuring blood alcohol. So actually, the lungs are the things that's closest to, you know, your blood. And as you're all aware, you know, our lungs are made of alveoli, and there's just a little bit of liquid on all these little bags that are the alveoli, and the liquid is there, because otherwise when they're expanding and contracting, there would be abrasion. You know, have you ever had a dry mouth? You get a sore tongue in like seconds, you know? So guess what? Whales are explosive breathers. I guess they go up, they go, I'm sure you've heard it. They breathe in and out just like that and down. So akin to us sneezing. So I said to myself, well, okay, what about whale snot? And if you look at that, I mean, look at this. Look at all that. Oh, priceless biological data. That's a blue whale, humpback whales. So the question was, how do we collect that data? And actually, this lady, Karina Whitehouse, did try in 2008 a radio-controlled helicopter, but it didn't work because, one, it was like gasoline-powered, and it was, you know, shooting the gasoline fumes into the blow, and two, it had a single point. So there's a single point of air going down and a single blow coming up. So it didn't really work. But I thought, wait a minute, with all these quadcopters and multicopters, maybe I could make it work. So first of all, any science, you've got to define your program, you know, develop your hypothesis. And in short, and I'm sorry, I'm going to read it, but we wanted a tool that was user-friendly, field-friendly, affordable, scalable, and replicable. And I can't tell you, including me, how many great ideas we've had in the lab, and then you get down to Argentina, and they don't work. Even just computers or web, you know, it's just amazing. So we wanted something that we could use, but other people could use. And typically, when you get a tool that does a lot of things, it costs more expensive. Do you know what I mean? More features on the car, more money for the car. So we were looking for something that didn't fit that paradigm. And you're going to notice a little theme here, got to work with me. So as my in-laws can tell you, I've always liked building things and breaking things and machines, and I've driven my wife crazy, their daughter crazy, but in 2011, I had this idea, because I was down in the Gulf of Mexico, maybe I could collect whale snot. So we started by actually building my own drones. And it was okay, but some of them didn't like being built and like flew off, never to be seen again. And we tried all different things. We tried waterproof drones, and then we hit the first problem. If you want to employ a new tool with whales, they're not going to let you try a new... You can't say, oh, I've got a great idea, you know, on how to remove somebody's lung. Can I give it a go? Like, no, wait, you've got to trial it. So this here is snot shot, okay? And actually, we 3D printed different whale blowholes, and this is a compressed air tank, and we had a little sensor on it, and when we flew the drone above it, it would shoot the gun, and it would shoot it everything up into the air. So that was our little snot shot. But then, of course, we realized we had to take it out into the field. So below it is snot yacht. with Snot Shot on it right there. And basically, Snot Yacht had pressure plate sensors, sound sensors, wave sensors, and we had microphones on the top, hydrophones underneath, so we could actually try to evaluate what effect we might have on the whales and then sort of get the permit to do the work. And it is funny, when you're developing a new tech, the problems are always the problems you sort of don't expect. I mean, it has to be the way with new tech. But I never thought as a biologist I would be writing a paper in Technologies for Practical Robot Applications. But here was the paper, and there's a little excerpt here, because the most important thing was, can the whales hear the drones? And it turns out here we could identify the sound, but the reality is it was indiscernible from ambient noise. So great, we're flying over a whale, it can't hear it. Now, by the way, whales are used to seeing birds up in the sky, so it's used to seeing that. And the whales are used to feeling some sort of wind over their back, you know, because that's what the oceans are like. So we're pretty excited here. So here comes the next problem. I got to raise money. And I mean this to you. You'd laugh. A lot of people have actually said to me, you know, this is a brilliant, oh, this is an amazing idea. Well done, you know. At the time, I asked my in-laws when I was going around saying, snot bot, they're like, you know. So I couldn't get anyone to give me any money. So I don't know, I hope you've all heard of Sir Patrick Stewart, Jean-Luc Picard, Professor Xavier. So he happens to be a friend of mine. So I called him up and I'm like, Patrick. And he says, yes, Ian, another one of those voices. I said, look, I want to harass you, okay, so that I can tell a story about not harassing animals. So he said, well, fine, come on by. Now, I thought he was in New York, so I had my whole team of four people. So I said, hey, we're going down to New York to see Patrick Stewart. They're like, yay. And I said, what's your address, Patrick? And he's like, 131, you know, Hollywood Hills. And I'm like, oh, man. So we all flew out to L.A., and here we are spending an afternoon with Sir Patrick Stewart. Oh. I'm just collecting data.
Ian, what the heck is that? What is going on?
I'm just measuring your stress levels.
All right, Ian, enough of this harassment. I need to know what is going on.
I'm collecting your snot.
Why do you need my tissue with my snot on it?
Come outside and I'll explain it to you.
What's going on here?
We're really looking for ways to collect biological data without harassing the animals. And here comes our drones we affectionately call Snotbot. Ocean Line? Yeah, well, anyway. Well, you can watch the whole video online if you want. But I got to tell you, the guy was a real sport. And it's actually the funny thing is, I think the first time he sneezed, we didn't get it. You know, so we said, Patrick, you got to sneeze again. He's like, what? You know, so then we made him sneeze a couple more times. But he was a real sport. But actually, I'm not sure that I would encourage this, but we actually did a Kickstarter campaign with Sir Patrick Stewart and raised $200,000. The bad news about it was, typically if you have a Kickstarter campaign, you're making something. Do you know what I mean? And then you sell this product. In our case, we weren't making anything, so we had to buy T-shirts and sell T-shirts and distribute them and mail them and, oh, you sent me the wrong size. And so we did clear about 120,000, but my whole staff of, like, whale biologists spent a whole summer, like, licking stamps and mailing out T-shirts and stickers to people. So I thought I'd give you an example now of snot collection. So here is the drone, and, you know, I'm not suggesting any of you lick this, but I haven't even cleaned it since I just came back from an expedition, but basically we fly the drone into the snot. Actually, the camera isn't on here. There's a camera, and I'm flying the drone by that camera, and we just use a Petri dish, okay? So the whale basically exhales, and the snot gets on the Petri dish, and then we literally take it back, and we got tiny little squeegees. You know, we squeegee it all down, and then suck it up and then put it in a little cryo tube and send it off to the lab. So it's really quite simple. And I think the thing you need to understand here, you know, we started with special absorption cloths but then they're full of snot, and then we had to put them in a centrifuge, and then we were getting bits of cloth in the whale snot and stuff. And so we tried all these different ideas, but I mean, how cool is this? Basically, there's a drone, you know? You stick a Petri dish on it. You stick a Petri dish on it, and then when it comes back, you collect it. So here is a snot collection flight for you. Oh, wait a minute. I pressed the wrong remote again. There we go. By the way, one of the funders got to do that. So four humpback whales. All this biological data just being thrown up for free. So I choose this one because it's upwind, okay? And by the way, notice how stressed this whale is. As in not. So I'm not like racing in like a race car. Just take it nice and easy. I get down to about 12 feet. I'm waiting for the whale to come up. And when the whale comes up, you just fly in. Bingo. You've been snotted. Now, what's interesting is, again, look at the animal, though. That animal has no idea that I've just got DNA, microbiomes, ketones, potentially pollutants, and hormones. And again, almost you can do this Elena, you can do it in a different follow-up talk, but, you know, the microbiomes are basically your biology, your biological machines that run your body. I think, don't we have more microbiome cells than we have our own cells, I think, in our body? And then the hormones are all the chemical triggers that say, you know, you're pregnant or you're lactating or whatever. So knowing what's going on with hormones and knowing what's going on with microbiomes and then having the DNA so you know the individual, you know the sex, you know who it's related to, you really are getting an amazing picture. And since I say picture, we're also getting photo ID. Actually, I'll just show you this one. I think you'd like to see this one. This is a slow-mo blow. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. But watch this here. See the blowhole? Can you see it's totally clear of the water now? So there's no water there. See, all of that is coming from the lungs. Do you see that? So it really is what we call the exhaled breath condensate. By the way, I'm now looking into a program as to whether we can photo ID whales from the blowhole. Because believe it or not, a lot of people are doing whale tails, but not all whales lift up their tails, and they don't lift up their tails all the time. But every whale has to come up and breathe. So actually, again, if you come sit down, please. But the other amazing area for us, and I have to tell you, wherever I go, I work with sort of regional biologists, and I've had people, friends of mine, who've been studying humpback whales actually in Alaska, and they're going, oh my God, I've never seen it do that, you know. Rarely do you have somebody that's been studying a whale for 25 years say, I've never seen it do that. So getting up into the air is giving us a whole new perspective in how they use their life, run their lives. In fact, I'm going to show you something that is a discovery I think I only realized the other day when I was prepping for this talk. But watch this. Just a breach. Actually, I think this is the one that side lunge right here. Is that the one? There we are, collecting snot again. Bubble netting, where they made this corral of nets, and the bubbles are making noise, and the whale just swims right up the middle. Another side lunge. Maybe it's early. I don't know if I'm going to be able to bring this back, but let me see if I can. Wait a minute, I think it was right at the beginning here. Might have been a different video. Yeah, you know, this is going to be very hard to see. See how the mouth is open there? Look below the mouth. See that white, can you see that white pectoral fin? Can I do that right there? It's clearer on my screen than yours. Can you see how the white thing, can I pause it there? Yeah, well, actually, so what clearly it was doing, it's got its mouth open, it's lunging at the prey, it's rotated its fin so it's white side up, and it's sort of going like that, so any fish that were there are being moved up towards the mouth. So if you want, I'll just try showing it one more time, but clearly the fin isn't that way. It's rolled the fin over to help scare, whatever else it can. It comes up a little bit better on my screen, but anyway, let's just go back just one more time. But, you know, you'd never know that it was using its pectoral fins. You see right there? It's doing that white. There's no reason for that fin to be over there, but it's clearly put it there so that any fish is probably like, oh, what's that? It's moving up towards where the animal's mouth is. Anyway, all right, moving on. This one was sort of a favorite of mine, and I can't attribute intelligence to this or sense of humor, but I have to show it. Here we are. We were down in Argentina with southern right whales, okay? And this right here is Caroline, okay? And she's got the sterile dish, you know, the Petri, everything here, a whole case, you know, and she's just working on processing the samples, and everything's clean and sterile, and everyone stay away from me, don't talk to me. I think she's got gloves on and a mask on. So that's Carolyn right there. This is me right here flying, and this is the whale, and this is what happened. I mean, it literally rolled over and snotted them totally. And basically, she had like 20 Petri dish and vials that were, you know, everything was contaminated. The good news now about the primers for collecting DNA, they're actually sort of species-based, so actually getting human DNA on the dish is not as big a deal anymore. But whale DNA meant that she couldn't use that. But I mean, look at that. I mean, that's like a perfect shot. It came over and just snotted us. And I'm like, who'd have thought it? Anyway, this was another fun one. Actually, I'll go back a step. So we went down to the Sea of Cortez, San Ignacio Lagoon with gray whales, because they come very close to the boat. So we were testing our new methodologies, you know, to collect snot. So rather than having to fly a mile away, we could fly 10 feet away and get a sample and fly back and then try this, fly 10 feet away and try. And then basically I think the whales had enough and decided we don't need no drone. So what's cool for us, and I've already spoken to this a little bit, rarely do you have a tool that has multiple forms of data, biological, DNA, photogrammetry, you're aware. If you've got a fixed focal plane lens, you know how high you are, you can work out the size of the animal. By the way, I thought this was quite interesting. Without even doing sort of morphometric analysis, this is a photograph I took of a southern right whale and then of a northern right whale at exactly the same time of the year in the animal's life cycle. Look how fat that animal is, and the calf. Look how skinny that. Look at the tail back here. Look. You know, so just right there when you're saying, what's the difference between northern and southern right whales is, for whatever reason, the northern right whales aren't getting the food. And then actually, when we look at these two blue whales, you can see this one right here is really skinny. I mean, they're both pretty skinny, but it's amazing sort of what we can do. And by the way, this is what we now call EarBot. This is a hydrophone. And again, when you record whales, you typically have a hydrophone on a boat, which means the boat is putting noise into the environment, or you have a hydrophone on the bottom of the ocean, and then the whales swim away. I'm like, wait a minute, why don't we fly the drone over to the whales, land it in the water, turn the engine off, and record the sounds? And we're trying lots more different ideas. This is FLIRBOT. And guess what? I joke that if you go to the doctor, you know, they take your temperature, even if you're, wait a minute, is my thing on auto? You know, you go to just pay your doctor's bill, and they sit down, we'll take your blood pressure and your temperature. No one's ever actually taken the temperature of a whale. So I'm hoping to do that this summer. But there's the blowhole, and there you can see that sort of hot pipe. That you know, there's the temperature of a whale is right there. This was a regular FLIR camera. You have to get a special FLIR camera called radiometric. And with the radiometric camera, you can interrogate every pixel to get the body temperature of a whale. But think about it. A whale snot comes up. There's high levels of microbiomes. There's high levels of viruses. The temperature is hot. You know what I mean? Wait a minute. This animal's sick. And maybe the future, almost to your class, maybe the future is we'll be using drones to actually give the animals antibiotics because we know they're sick. But now it's so hard to know what's going on. And again, we've had an educational department. I have a little robotics club where these kids, typically they come in and set fire to stuff, but we've had some fun with that too. Okay, and again, this is almost what I spoke to. I think I may have set this on auto run, but anyway. EarBot, FLIRBOT. We're now using drones in disentanglement. Maybe we can deploy tags. We're looking at ocean plastics. So that's EarBot again, a FLIRBOT. Again, potentially, if we do have to biopsy, maybe it would be better to biopsy from a drone because you don't need the boat close approach. This is disentanglement. I had an idea for actually maybe you were talking about this, taking air samples. So here's my prototype of SniffBot. But anyway, but again, you know, even with fires now, they you know, have to get people in all these funky suits to sort of go down and go into the contaminated area. Why not just fly a drone? And actually, we're looking now at incorporating these sort of autonomous boats with drones to collect biological data. And again, I think what's exciting about this, when we talk about, you know, monitoring reefs, you know, tracking, what else? I really think the future of oceanography is going to be using these tools. And I was really lucky. Last year, I was actually invited to speak at the UN General Assembly, just saying that, look, you know, you folks can afford a drone. You know, five drones, maybe it's $50,000, but people can now start monitoring drones offshore. And another whole 1 hour talk. I actually joke with people. I say each one of these slides I could talk for an hour for. But I think, you know, is citizen science. There's a point where people can be collecting data for us. And a lot of oceanography is I go out for a week and collect data and come back. What happens if that was like a bad, how is that week representative of the whole? So I'm thinking having more affordable equipment out there for longer periods of time really could sort of change the world. And again, with reference to grabbing people's imagination, I mean, just on this page, we have, I think, 2 million hits. Of course, it helps if you have Sir Patrick Stewart, but there you go. But it's still cool that I've got people thinking about whales and thinking about whale biology. And actually, this is an NBC news piece, which is sort of fun.
The images, quite simply, are breathtaking. A low pass over a pod of humpback whales cruising off Alaska. Slowly, the camera moves closer, and then this. The biggest animal on the planet exhales, all of it blowing right into the face of a drone hovering just 12 feet above.
It's that stuff that's coming out that's full of this priceless information, you know, on whale biology.
Dr. Ian Kerr says that priceless data is what the petri dishes mounted on the drone are collecting. Live biological samples from deep inside a whale's lungs.
DNA, microbiomes, you know, that make your whole body work. We've got stress hormones, pregnancy hormones.
All in the petri dish.
All in the petri dishes.
And not just Alaskan humpbacks. Off the coast of Mexico, the drone flew the full length of this massive blue whale. The whale, says Kerr, probably thinks the drone is a bird.
For perspective, this boat is 13 feet long. A gray whale is 50 feet long. A blue whale, 100 feet. A perspective best captured by a drone.
Like this view of a mother nursing her calf. At Oregon State University, Scott Baker is now adding those DNA samples to a catalog of 3,000 whales, analyzing their age, health, and any sign of environmental threat.
It's not just about learning about this population now, but about understanding it over the next 10, 20, even 50 years.
While some whale populations are slowly recovering from near extinction, others are still in danger. More information could help save them.
I think we sort of hit the lottery here. You know, it's almost like the invention of the microscope for cellular biologists.
A scientific jackpot to save a giant of the seas. Tom Costello, NBC News, Gloucester, Massachusetts.
Tom Costello, yeah, there we go. Actually, he was a really nice guy. Also, some of you, we were invited down. It was very funny. We got invited to Our Oceans Conference in D.C., and they had NASA, Woods Hole, you know, all of these multi-million-dollar budget groups, and Ocean Alliance was there. And, of course, Secretary of State John Kerry and Theresa Hines came over, and I think all these people were like, what is this snotbot thing? But I think it speaks to having a good idea isn't enough. You know, you've got to find a way to engage people. If you engage people, excite people, I probably wouldn't be here today. I don't know, but there we go. Hope you're not regretting that. So again, we've talked briefly about this. Why focus on stress? I mean, it said most animals don't show any illness. Typically, they reach like a critical point and then, you know, their health goes rapidly down. Us, I think we, you know, generally speaking, I mean, we sort of get sicker and sicker, but animals seem to hold themselves and then go over this tipping point and go down because it makes them more available for predation if they show their weakness. So it's so hard to know, you know, what stresses a blue whale? A drop of rain is a tidal wave to an ant, but it's not measurable by a blue whale. Okay? But we understand stress. So, you know, impaired immune system, cessation of lactation, you know, again, that dry mouth sensation. You know what happens? You get scared and your body shuts down non-essential organs so that you're ready for fight or flight. And now you're very lucky today because this is hot off the press. My friends at MIT came up with a visual stress test, okay? So you're going to be able to go home tonight and tell or whoever how stressed you are. So what's actually going to happen is two dolphins are going to appear, and if they look the same, you're not stressed. The more different they are, the more stressed you are. Have you been ready? I was very lucky to get my hands on this. Yeah. Is that it? Oh, come on. All right. Anyway, I'm just trying to get a point that, you know, stress is a great indicator, but it's so hard to know. It's like my in-laws were laughing again. They've heard it like 10 times, you know. Anyway, another big thing, our group, Ocean Alliance, I think the future of science probably isn't groups like Woods Hole that do it all. They do the analysis, they collect the data, they have the boats. I think the future is really going to be groups like Ocean Alliance working with other groups, other specialists, and making that jigsaw puzzle. And I remember growing up, they had a TV show where bits of sort of a jigsaw puzzle would come up and the contestant would have to guess what it is. That's what biology is. We're putting up these bits of a picture until we think we have enough to understand what's going on. And it really has been incredible, the collaborations I've had and the capacity of this, on one level, this silly little drone to sort of change the way we do whale research. We are having a problem, as you can imagine, and forget all this data, don't worry about it, but the problem we're having now is groups like mine used to be data deficient. You know, we couldn't get enough information. Now the drones record everything. Now I'm living in these sort of tsunamis of data. So it's very interesting, probably another whole conversation. We've done some work with Intel on AI and machine learning. And what I, you know, for me, the idea of machine learning, and there are two types of machine learning, won't get into that today, is the idea that I could be up in the field studying some animal, you know, and all of this raw data is just coming in, and the computer might see patterns that I haven't seen. You know, generally, you have your hypothesis, you go out in the field and you test it, and then you come back to the lab and find out it was wrong, it has to be modified. To be in the field and have your hypothesis evolve based on the information you're getting is more economically viable, it's better for you, better for the animals, and that's another one-hour talk. But anyway, so ending up now, what's 70% salt water, relies on a finely balanced ecosystem, covers most of the Earth. Who wants to guess? Well, thank you, but guess what? I'm trying to trick you. You should know me by now. Humanity. Do you realize the salinity of our blood and our tears is exactly the same as the ocean? So I like to say to people, we are ocean. And I think, you know, I said this at the beginning of the talk, and I'm ending the talk with it. The reality is the oceans are the largest mediating force on the planet. Even here in North Adams, you know, the weather, the food, transportation, commerce, it's so much of it is ocean bound. And we really have to care more about our oceans. And my daughter is now 17, but, you know, when I asked her when she was very young what was the one thing that we have control over, I think she thought it was a TV remote. So it's not the TV remote. But I tell you, you need to think about this, because the truth is we control very little, but then we control everything. Because the one thing we can control is our own mind. That's your mind. You make the decisions. People don't make the decisions for you. You make that choice to accept what somebody else or somebody else says or doesn't say. So at the end of the day, we don't need some new technology. We don't need some rampant invention or some new social system. All we have to do is change our mind as to the value of this blue planet. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think we have time for maybe one question, and then we would invite others to come up individually.
Is there I'm sorry to go a bit long there. Yes,
lucky person who wants to throw out the question. Great.
Interesting to see how the nerves and muscles of the blowhole operate, and could you do it from the drone?
Wow. You know, you might be able to. So the question for you, Herb, was, you know, could we see how the nerves and muscles of the blowhole work? I mean, this summer I'm hoping to use a thing called a hyperspectral camera. And we actually look at the world with three colors. And these hyperspectral cameras look at the world with 271 colors. So maybe we'll be able to see that. I mean, the good news and bad news, and I'd say this as an encouragement to all of you, you know, my group doesn't have a budget like Woods Hole, so I don't get to develop a lot of this stuff. It really is akin to my cooking, which is I, you know, get the spaghetti, and if it sticks on the wall, that's a great thing. So never say to yourself, do you know what I mean? I can't do it, you know, I can't compete or whatever. The reality is just going and doing and trying and learning and building is a way to change the world. And great question. Thank you. Well, I'll be here if anybody else has any other questions. Thank you very much.